time to welcome in Sam Cosentino from Sportsnet, our junior hockey expert and prospects expert, with his April draft rankings up right now at sportsnet.ca. Hello, Cos. What's going on?
Tiny, what's up, buddy? How's it going?
It's good, man. It's good. I quite enjoyed your latest at sportsnet.ca, and we'll get into it in just a second. But before we go anywhere else, Will wants to know if you're rocking the handlebar mustache right now.
No question. And you'll see it in the pregame on the Scotiabank Wednesday night hockey. Had it got her all tightened up there yesterday, ready to rock.
Oh, boy. You've done some grooming, hey?
The ode to Denny Marouk.
I love it. I love
How's
it.
How's the salad?
Brutal. It's always been the worst in sports, and it remains that way just a little longer.
So that makes the handlebar even greasier, Cos. I love it.
No question. And that's the look we're trying to achieve here. Well, there's no doubt, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
We're grinding it out during the pandemic, so you may as well get down and a little greasy.
Exactly. I love it. The handlebars suit you, by the way. It's a good look, my friend. We'll dive into the specifics of your April rankings in a second, but how hard have these been to put together for you over the last number of months?
It sucks. It's difficult because, A, you have to lean on people more than I would like to lean on people. Travel's been obviously very difficult. There's been no hockey in Ontario to get out and see live. And so I'm kind of hanging my hat on potentially getting an opportunity to get out to the under-18s. But, you can't tell the whole story from video. And in some cases, especially with some of the European players playing in the MHL, the Finnish under-20, whatever, it's really difficult to get a handle because finding context is a challenge. So, if I were to go watch a CHL game, I have a pretty good idea. Valdor is a really good team. They're playing, PEI. They're a really good team, or Charlottetown. I have a really good idea that Moncton's playing against Sherbrooke, who's not so good this year. So, if a defenseman gets walked or, you're seeing a guy do things, it's 6 points a game, you're able to put it into context. And a lot of times in video, especially with the European players and for someone like myself, that becomes a real challenge. So, and you never get the whole picture. What's a guy doing in the warmups? Is he goofing off? Is he talking to his buddies? Is he actually getting ready for the game? How does he react to a teammate on a bad pass or a blind pass? Or what's he going to the bench? Is he yapping at the coach? Or is he talking to his line mates? Is he trying to figure stuff out? What's the body language like? All of these things that you can see live and in person and where you have the opportunity to watch plays develop, you don't get that in video. So anyone who tells me that they can scout purely on video alone, I would challenge their results, in years down the road to see how successful they would be against someone who does right. In-person scouting.
Have you, when you've spoken to NHL scouts or people that you keep in contact with, I'm curious as to what their experiences have been, how their lists are coming together, all that type of stuff. What has the feedback been in that regard?
Well, they're definitely meeting a lot more, and most of them are trying to take that approach where they're like, okay, we can meet more and we can have a wider variance of opinions because we're all working off video for the most part. Now you're getting into the USHL a little bit. You're getting into, into the Quebec League and now the Western Hockey League, and you have some live and in-person viewings, in Europe as well. But it's not quite the same as when your head scout has an opportunity to be able to cross-reference by being able to see all of those people in person. That opportunity has not presented itself. And so when you're looking at, talking to some of these guys, yeah, they're sick of video. Yeah, they're trying to put a positive spin on it by maybe having more meetings and a little bit more variance of opinion. Yet you're still working for the most part off video, and they do find that challenging.
Yeah, and it just is the most bizarre year. And that's why, like, when we take a look to the 2021 draft order when it actually gets done in July and we see what it's looking back at. I'm curious as to, because everybody puts out their list. You put out yours monthly and there's the different scouting services and then teams have their internal lists. I wonder how different they're all going to look when it's all said and done, maybe more so than ever before.
I agree. And I think you could pretty comfortably look at a top eight or maybe a top 10 and see a little bit of variance as to where each player fits. In that group of 10, I would be somewhat more hesitant and a little bit more nervous and maybe somewhat more prone to being able to move a pick that sits after that 10th pick. But it is going to be fascinating because other teams are going to be sitting there and saying, well, you know, we put less value into picks past 10 because of the, you know, there's less certainty. So, you know, trade deadline is going to be a really fascinating thing for me. There's a lot of moving parts to it. I wonder if we don't see more picks per trade move based on the fact that the sellers are going to say, hey, yeah, well, that's great. I got a first rounder this year, but you're going to have to sweeten the pot with, you know, with maybe a third in 2022, because we're sort of uncertain about what's going to happen here in the latter stages of the 2021 draft. So I am fascinated to see how that all plays itself out, but man, it's difficult. And, you know, you don't want to be picking inside the top 10, because that means you've had a bad year and you're out of the playoffs, but you also, you know, don't want to be picking in the middle of the pack where you're probably one and done. And you're saying to yourself, oh, geez, what are we going to do here?
Right.
Teams would never tell you that, but I think from an outsider's perspective, I think I can confidently say that.
Sam Cosentino's with us, sportsnet.ca. His April draft rankings are up right now at sportsnet.ca. Sammy, you've got Michigan D-man Owen Power ranked number one. How come?
Well, a 6'6", 215-pound defenseman is tough to come by. And so there are some people out there that maybe Naki doesn't play as physically or as hard-nosed as they would like to see. And I think that all comes with time. When you're used to being the biggest guy, sometimes you don't have to play that way. When you get to the pro ranks, you're going to be challenged more in that physicality in that regard. And so that's understandable. But in the meantime, this guy moves really well. He's got good hockey sense. He plays with some moxie in his game. And the fact that when you look down the list, how many 6'6 defensemen are in the National Hockey League? They're kind of like unicorns. You know, you look at Char, you look at Hedman, you look at a Ty Myers, and you think about the longevity that those players have had and the success they've had through that longevity. And you have to think that Owen Power is going to be one of those guys that's going to play 15 years and improve at his game. You know, I think a lot about Victor Hedman when I think about the fact that, you know, when Victor Hedman first came over and started playing, he didn't play with the most bite or the most jam. You know, he moved pucks pretty well, and you've watched his game progress to being a Norris Trophy guy who now is a really difficult guy and a pain in the rear end to play against. And I think Owen Power is going to follow that path here, and that's why I have him at number one.
Now, this could end up being one of the, if not the greatest draft ever for one college program, at least when it comes to the top, because you've also got teammates at Michigan, Matthew Beniers and Kent Johnson, ranked second and fifth, both of those gentlemen forwards. Tell me about his two Michigan teammates.
Well, Beniers is more of an all-around guy who blends skill with work ethic, and you know, he doesn't give Yanathan away defensively. And I think when you go back and look at his usage at the World Juniors, when he's out there taking draws in the final minute of a tie game or down a goal or protecting the lead, that says a lot about being an underage player and being tasked with that responsibility, yet having the ability to handle it. So it really is about the marriage of will and skill when it comes to Beniers. And then when I look at a guy like Kent Johnson, you think about maybe more of that European style where he just lights you up with his ability to rush the puck, with what he's able to do with his hands. A guy that, I think, down the road you'd pay to watch play because he can bring you out of his seat and be that highlight reel type of player on a regular basis. He plays with so much confidence with the puck that there really isn't a play that he's not thinking about putting into action, whether it's, you know, a no look behind the look pass, a spin move, a lacrosse style goal, whatever the case might be. There's so many tricks up his sleeve that he's a guy that I think just brings that dynamic offensive ability to the game. And I think that's why, you're looking at those three Michigan guys in the top five. I would, you know, all but guarantee they will all go in the top 10. I can say that quite confidently, but I have them right now all going in the top five, and I don't think that's out of reach.
We're in conversation with Sam Cosentino, Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. His April draft rankings are up right now at Sportsnet.ca. Well,
Sammy, got to ask you the kind of burning question in a lot of hockey fans' minds. What do you make of the third Hughes boy?
Yeah, I really think highly of him. And, you know, I've watched him going back to his minor midget days playing, I mistakenly referred to it as midget hockey. That's changed now as an under 16 player. with Little Caesars. And so you're looking at a guy that's really, really progressed. I think when you look at the Hughes boys, you talk about three things that are in place. They all skate really, really well. They're all super confident with the puck, and they all have great hockey sense based on the fact that they've grown up in a hockey family, both mom and dad. So when it comes to Luke, I think at this point in his career, he defends a little bit better than where Quinn was. I think he's a guy that doesn't have that same dynamic offensive ability as Quinn, but that's not absent from his game whatsoever. So when I'm talking about Luke Hughes, I'm talking about having those three foundational pieces in place. And then the fact that you looked at, he almost put up a point per game before he got injured, and you're saying to yourself, maybe this guy's going to be able to produce at the next level to the point that's become unexpected. And I think about, all right, let's look at Jake Sanderson last year, where he wasn't producing much early on. Then in February, he started to take off. And then from there, you saw that he was the first defenseman taken in last year's draft, fifth overall to Ottawa. And I think Luke is following along that same path.
I do want to ask you about a guy that I'm sure a lot of Hitman fans are familiar with. It's too bad they can't watch him in person this year. But Dylan Gunther, for a lot of people, Sammy, a slam dunk top five pick this year. The same for you. And has he benefited at all from playing alongside a guy like Jake Neighbors?
Yeah, there's no question about it. And from the same point that you have that benefit of playing alongside another first rounder, you also have the fact that you're able to evaluate him playing with someone who you expect to be a top six National Hockey League guy here down the road. So that also gives you the indication that, hey, it's one thing to benefit from playing with good players. It's also another thing for those players to benefit from your play. And I think that's what's happened with Dylan Gunther. We're going to show something tonight that is very much reminiscent of a Connor McDavid pass to Leon Draisaitl in the game against the Toronto Maple Leafs going back about a week ago, where he kind of has eyes in the back of the head and zips a pass, you know, across two bodies and lands perfectly on the tape of Neighbors in this particular case. So you're talking about a guy whose playmaking abilities have emerged this season. And yes, we take it with a grain of salt. We know that there's no travel. We know that they're playing, you know, in a bubble or a protected environment type of situation. And we know that they're playing on a really good team against that same competition over and over again. So we definitely take that with a grain of salt. But not only is he scoring at a pace improved from last year, he's also added that layer of playmaking to his game that's really become evident as well.
Final one from me is on a guy who switched the leagues this year. And as you put in your notes, kind of proving he can play against men, sitting on the outside or just on the outside of your top 10, right at number 10, hanging on to that spot is Cole Sillinger. People recognize the last name, of course, the son of Mike Sillinger, and a move to the USHL. Perhaps a good thing for his NHL draft status, Sammy?
Well, he's going to end up playing more games, and he's also the benefactor of being able to play in the BioSteel All-American game tonight. He's got that dual citizenship, born in Arizona, if I'm not mistaken. I think that game is a huge thing. It would be the equivalent if he were in Medicine Hat to be able to play in the top prospects game, because that's not going to happen, or at least not going to happen in the typical fashion. He gets the opportunity to play in that game, yet he will also benefit from being able to play with Canada's under-18 team. So I think really strongly about what Cole brings to the table. He's a physically mature guy. There's no doubt his shot play at an NHL level right now. There are some concerns about his skating, but as we've seen with players who've gone into the National Hockey League, that's usually something that can improve based on, you know, whether it's technical things, efficiency, you know, evaluating and maybe changing the stride a little bit. And of course, with more leg strength, that also is an area that can improve. So big fan of Cole Sillinger. I've talked to him a couple of times. I love what he brings to the table. 10 might be a little aggressive. I think if his skating were in the area of some of those ahead of him, you know, he'd be very comfortably inside that top 10. But right now for me, I have him at 10.
And then I did lie, as Pat called me a liar over text, and I do apologize. I do have one more. Who putting you on the spot a little bit, Sammy, maybe who's been your biggest surprise or biggest riser here as you gather information of the early parts of this 2021 draft class?
Well, Chaz Lucius is a guy that, you know, he's played in 12 games. He's put up 18 points in the U.S. under-18 program. He's a guy who's a really good playmaker, but also, you know, he refers to himself as a shoot-first type of guy. But had to come back from a really difficult knee injury rehabbed at a pace that many thought he wouldn't be able to get back and might not be able to play games this year. But he's just kind of getting going. So in his 12 games, the production has been there. He, too, will get an opportunity to play in that game tonight and will also represent the U.S. at the World Under-18s. I think he's going to be a guy that a lot of people are going to look at and see if that not only can he cement somewhere a spot somewhere inside that top 10, but maybe move himself into that top five conversation.
Quickly before we wrap, Sammy, what does this draft class look like for goaltenders?
Well, I mean, Sebastian Kosa is a guy that some of the listeners in your area might be familiar with, you know, playing with the Edmonton Oil Kings, a 6'6" guy, left shot catch, a guy who's a left catch, rather, a guy who's really confident in his abilities, who's athletic yet technical at the same time. Jesper Wallstad is a guy who's a late birthday guy. So I always like, if you're going to take a goalie in the first round, I like to have that additional time as a late birthday guy. We saw him a little bit in Sweden at the World Juniors, and we're seeing him play in the Swedish Pro League and put up decent numbers there. So again, another guy, 6'3", 6'4". So that height thing, he's not going to be restrictive for any one team. You know, there's some teams out there that won't take a guy, you know, 6'2 or below. For some teams, that extends to 6'4". Neither of these guys are going to have to worry about it. So when it comes to taking a goaltender in the first round, I might be more apt to do it this year than in any other year because of the uncertainty surrounding, you know, what's been the challenge in evaluating players in person.
Great stuff, Sammy. If you want to go check it out, sportsnet.ca is the latest April rankings on the 2021 NHL draft. Sammy, you doing them once a month from here on out?
Well, I mean, that's the plan. I mean, we'll see what happens. You know, the under-18s looks like they're going to happen. And so that will allow an opportunity in the first part of May to put out another list, because there'll be some, hopefully for me, some opportunity to see some of the European players live and in person. But that's the plan here moving forward. But who knows in this crazy pandemic what the heck is going to go on.
Well, right now, go check out Sam's April rankings. And I'll tell you this much, Flames fans are pretty dialed in on this draft the way the season's gone out here. So people have their eye on whether it's Beniers or Power or Guenther or whoever. Flames fans are pretty excited for this coming year's draft. So we'll have you on again real soon, Sammy. Thank you so much.
Can't wait. Thanks, Will. Thanks, Danny. Take care, guys.